Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Tonight, we're going to continue our look at the controversial degazettement of the Kuala Langat North Forest Reserve. Yesterday, Selangor Menteri Besar Amiruddin Syahri told PKR party leaders that he will be postponing that degazettement. But what does that mean, the postponement, given that the gazette for the excision of permanent reserved forest has already been published on August 12th? And what ecological impact could there be if the development goes ahead? Faisal Parish is the director of the NGO Global Environment Centre. He joins us on the show tonight. Faisal, good evening. Thank you for being with us this evening. Now, from an environmental point of view, I wanted to ask you what your assessment is of the Selangor State Government's justification for its decision. They're saying that the Kuala Langat North Forest Reserve is isolated from the main forest complex, that it's facing development pressure from surrounding built-up areas, and that this forest reserve has a history of fires. Do these justifications make sense to you?
Frankly, the justification by the state government is ludicrous. Most of what they're saying is totally wrong and not borne out by the facts. They claim the area is always burning, and they say clearing the forest and doing the development will stop the fire. This is totally wrong. In fact, there's been hardly any fire for the last 6 years because the Orang Asli themselves, who've been guardians of the area for more than 130 years, took action to prevent other people, outsiders, coming to the area and leading to fires. And they have spent vast amount of time to restore back the degraded forests, which were there by the negligence of the previous management and the development projects around. So that's totally wrong about burning. They also claiming that there are no trees or no tall trees in the area to be degazetted. This is also absolutely wrong. The area to be degazetted is 98% covered with trees. Many of them are very tall, mature, very diverse rainforest tree species, and there's hardly any low trees or shrub area. They're all tall trees. So that is totally wrong. And then this is meant to support socioeconomic progress in some way. Well, I don't think that the people of the Selangor are getting any benefit from this type of activity. In saying it's small, yes, it's relatively small, but there is still incredible diversity there. And small is also beautiful. There are many species that can survive in relatively small areas, but we need a minimum area. So we need the full 950 hectares and not half of it as they're proposing. So,
yeah,
frankly,
so Faisal, can I ask you about that? So it seems like they're suggesting that they have compromised by reducing the area that is to be degazetted, and that they have not compromised on the policy of keeping the percentage of forest reserve in the state. And they're very big on trumpeting these replacement forests, which their consultants, as they quote, say, are just as good from a biodiversity point of view. Could you tell us more about these replacement forests, the argument, as well as the reality on the ground?
I mean, frankly, to say you can cut off half a forest and you can replace it in three different places, it's saying, like, you can cut off your head and you can still run around. We don't want our head cut off or our legs cut off and saying everything's fine. You can find another head 100 kilometers away. That doesn't work in nature. That doesn't work in ecology to say that you can replace them. All they're trying to do is just an administrative thing to keep us fooled that they're increasing somehow the area of protected forest. They're not. Those forests that they're so-called gazetting or protecting, they're already existing forests. They're not creating new forests. So they're destroying one and just administratively putting a flag on others and saying everything is fine. And are those equivalent or better areas? Absolutely not. The biggest of those areas, the so-called Sungai Panjang Forest, which they just gazetted last week as the main replacement, and they said this is peat swamp forest, This is much better than the so-called degraded North Langepisong Forest. We know this area. We've been complaining what the state has been doing to it. In fact, the state has bulldozed about a third of the forest already, and they were given stop work order by the Department of Environment. Their machinery has been impounded, and the site has been shut down because the State Agricultural Development Corporation is busily destroying the site that they're saying is the replacement site. So I'm not sure about the other two.
Can you explain that a little bit? So we understand that the gazette for the accession of this forest was only published on August 12th. Are you saying there's bulldozing already happening, that forest area has been already cleared?
They started the bulldozing in April this year. So they wanted to, I mean, they had a plan, a totally half-baked plan, that they wanted to develop oil palm and destroy the forest for oil palm. Then that was turned down by Department of Environment. Then they said, let's plant it with coconuts and the maize and other thing. And they thought they could do that without an EIA. So they already started clearing the area until they were arrested and stopped by Department of Environment. But it seemed during the MCO, they've even cleared a bigger area of an adjacent, very important conservation forest. So it seemed that the state government absolutely does not understand or respect the law or follow any aspect of the law. So we cannot believe anything that they're saying.
Who's they? Faisal, when you say they, who are you referring to?
The state government. The State Agricultural Development Corporation, chaired by the chief minister, has been the one destroying the forest that he and that they're announcing is the replacement forest. And they can't say they're ignorant because GC, we have written many times, we've tried to have meetings, we've sent them photographs, we've told them exactly what's going on, but they totally ignore what we're saying, and we've highlighted that these are the same areas that earlier last year they said they would give as the replacement forest, but they've just carried on destroying them.
Yeah, I understand. You know, yesterday we heard about the history of the Kuala Langa North Forest Reserve, you know, the process, and there were accusations of insincerity. Now you're telling us that, in fact, the state government of Selangor has been dishonest to the public in its representation of what's going on. Yesterday we heard there was going to be a postponement of this degazettement. What do you make of this new twist in the saga?
I mean, it would be very nice that if the postponement was really meaningful, but maybe it's just a PR exercise. Even the way that the statement was phrased, the postponement is to give more time to explain to the stakeholders about the issues raised. Not it's more time to review or reconsider the project and gazette back the area. The way that the statement was given out yesterday, it implied the area had not been degazetted. But we all know they already degazetted it 2 weeks ago, and they just hope no one would know that. So to me, it looks like they want to bluff everyone, and they want to just carry on and buy time for themselves. I mean, from the very beginning, they have not been sincere about having a dialogue and a process. Global Environment Center first heard rumors about this almost 3 years ago, that they were planning the degazettement. And we have wrote numerous letters. We have many, many times asked for meeting, many, many times gone to see and talk to different agencies, and they have totally refused to entertain or to meet or to consider or even listen to the concern of the Orang Asli, the local communities. They have kept on saying they will brief, they will inform, but they have never gone down to the ground. They have never informed the local Orang Asli community properly. The only thing the Orang Asli community have received is threats that their land, their house going to be bulldozed, that their land going to be taken away if they do not sign letters to say they welcome the degazettement. And this is totally not what we should be expecting in 21st century of a government, a so-called enlightened government, Pakistan government, which pledged in its election manifesto that it would not be doing any of these grand development projects, that it would respect the right of community, it respects human rights, and it would really look for a sustainable environment approach. But unfortunately, the last 2 or 3 years, we have had totally the opposite of what has been preached earlier.
Faisal, then having said all that, how do you think activists and the scientific community and Orang Asli stakeholders, how should we respond to this? Is there any reversal, any possibility of a reversal?
Of course, if there is the political will, it can be reversed in a few moments. It's not difficult. And we saw that in Johor, I believe 18 months ago. In Johor, the Pola Pokut State Park was de-gazetted one day, and then to perhaps allow a resort development. And there was a lot of protest, and it was re-gazetted the following week. Exactly the same could happen here. And I think that's the best way forward. If the thing is going to be reconsidered and there's going to be proper feasibility done, that's going to take 6 months, a year, or whatever to do that properly. So let us put back the status quo. Let's gazette back that area. Let's do the proper study. Let's do it in an open, professional, transparent way, and then make the proper decision in an open way, not behind closed doors, hiding behind the COVID pandemic, not threatening people, not lying about what's going on. This needs to be done in a proper way. And how can people respond? I mean, it's difficult to respond if there's no surety that whatever is said or done by the stakeholders is listened to. I mean, it almost seems like the whole last 2 years of public inquiries was just a sham or a scam to try to placate people by giving people opportunity. Because they said absolutely the opposite of what the people said should be done, then they did. Of course, they reduced the area.
It's quite extraordinary. Sorry, Faisal. Yes. I want to just ask you. There is an extraordinary amount of doublespeak, I think, going on. I think we all agree with you about that. Even on the question of de-gazettement, I'm told that in the proper process would have been to de-gazette, alienate to the business or commercial interest, as well as re-gazette or gazette replacement forest. All would have happened simultaneously. And I'm told that at this point in time, the only course that could succeed is for the commercial interest, the companies involved, to, as it were, pull out of the deal. It's only if they do so that the state will have the opportunity to revisit this question. What do you make of this argument?
I don't believe that at all. I mean, the area was only de-gazetted last week. I'm sure they will not have a land title. They will not have transferred the land to this one ringgit company. Maybe if the one ringgit company is unhappy, the state can pay the one ringgit back and then they can close the company down. But it's not like the company has invested hundreds of millions in the feasibility study and the work, and the state has led it on. This company only just set up the other month. So this is totally not the... They do not have any rights. And if the government have been so stupid to sign an agreement, so-called assigning rights, and the company wants to sue back, I mean, that's the stupid fault of the government. But there is no way that the government can tomorrow re-gazette the area, just as was done in Johor. This is a sovereign right. The government can just decide to re-gazette, and it's re-gazetted. And they have not yet given it to anyone. And even if they gave it to someone, that doesn't have any right, because the area is still gazetted as a strict conservation area under the Town and Country Planning Act. They cannot do anything in the area. And they have not done an EIA, so they cannot do anything in the area. So they don't have any approval.
Faisal, just now you mentioned that you wish this whole process had been done in a more transparent manner. Can you detail for me what exactly you'd like to see redone transparently? Which part is it that you, where are the missing gaps in here, in this process?
I mean, number one, there was never a real proposal what this development was about. And it was, we are told it was from one mysterious company in the beginning, and they had some wonderful plan, but that was never presented, that's never existed, and now it evaporated, and now suddenly overnight another company has popped up, also presumably with no plan. And so first, where's the development plan? that was so important that you can destroy the national heritage of the state just for this wonderful plan that will bring benefit. That's not there. Secondly, the public inquiry process needs to be redone. Actually, according to the rules, the inquiry should have been held within a month of closing objections, and it was organized 6 months later with 1 day notice, and then the report should have been available a month after that. The report's not been made available. We've asked for it under freedom of information, and they've refused to provide it. So provide the report analyzing that. If they have a consultant who said this bulldozed forest in Sungai Panjang is much better, provide that report, make that available. Don't hide behind the words and the lies. They have to really do it seriously. But, I mean, frankly, it's like a house of cards. It's not made on anything credible. So to say that it should be run professionally, I mean, there's nothing there to be professional about it. There's no evidence being presented that there was a credible or important or valuable activity other than land speculation. The Menteri Besar announced in 17th of March to the State Assembly last year that the state would get so much money from this project. He said the state were going to ask the company to pay 3 ringgit a square foot, and the state would get so much value from that for 3 ringgit a square foot. When we all know that the value of the land there, if you look across the road in Cyberjaya, 500 meters away, land is going for 110 ringgit a square foot. So there's a slight difference between 3 ringgit the state asked for and 110 ringgit, which is the value. And I think this is the heart of what's going wrong here. And unless now the new company is going to pay 110 ringgit, 6.18 billion for the degazetted area, which I very much doubt, I mean, this is not a serious proposition. And if the company really has 6.18 billion to spend, there's plenty of other land available, degraded land, empty land, that could be used. And that's what the state should be doing, about directing investment to improving land, not to destroying the core values of the state.
Okay. And Faisal,
the indigenous Oromo community, who've looked after the area for hundreds of years. Yes.
Unfortunately, we've run out of time. So thank you so much for being on the show. We have to take a quick break. That was Faisal Parish of the NGO Global Environment Center. We'll come back after this break and take a look at the business angle of this increasingly murky saga. So stay tuned to Consider This. Hi, thank you so much for staying with Sharad and I on Consider This. But if you've just joined the show tonight, we're discussing the Selangor State Government's move to degazette more than half of the Kuala Langat North Forest Reserve, which is equivalent to the size of 865 football fields. Now, of this area, 91% will be given to private company Gabungan Indah Sdn Bhd for a mixed development project. We have joining us on the line investigative journalist Emmanuel Samarathisa joining us now. Emmanuel, thank you for being on the show. Can we take a look at the history of this proposed development project? I mean, I understand there was a change of developer along the way. Initially, it was supposed to be Titian Jutaria Sdn Bhd, and Menteri Besar Incorporated, that was slated to be the developers. Can you walk us through what you know about these companies and why there was a change of developers along the way?
Right. First off, hi, Melissa and Sharad. Thanks for having me. So now, to your question, Melissa, well, I think it started last year. It was around March, I guess, where Selangor Menteri Besar Amiruddin Syari revealed that the two companies that were to develop around 900 plus hectares of the forest reserve were Menteri Besar Inc. and Titian Jutaria Sdn Bhd. So now Menteri Besar Inc. Is the state investment vehicle, while Titian Jutaria, they were controlled by the Selangor Royal House, okay? But then, so when this blew up, what happened was that there was immense pushback, I think, from NGOs, from stakeholders, and then what happened was that I think it led to a motion by Najwan Halimi in the State Assembly, and along the way, if I'm not wrong, TTN Jutaria dissolved, so the company is no longer in existence, and the issue sort of died down. And I think it came back up again in April this year. And retrospectively, we know now that in May, the State Assembly, the EXCO agreed to degazette a smaller plot of land compared to the 900, so I think it was about 500 plus hectares. And the company that was awarded the rights to develop this land is Gabungan Indah Sdn Bhd, which has a sole director. His name is Muhammad Fadil Muskan, and also a sole shareholder, Vibrantscape Sdn Bhd.
Emmanuel, I read your piece, and it's brilliant. It's very well detailed in The Malaysianist, and you tell a compelling story. But I wonder if, how do we put these different elements together? You mentioned the sole director, who is an ex-Johor UMNO youth chief.
Yes.
You mentioned that the company concerned essentially is held by a Sarawak group, the Samling group, your holding Berhad, and they're linked to the former chief minister of Sarawak, not the current governor, Taib. So we have all these fascinating elements. You as an investigative journalist, very few of you in this country, by the way, how do you make the link? I mean, what pulls all these elements together and have them now as key players in this very interesting saga around a very important piece of natural history?
So I guess, it goes all the way back to the... the founding of Samling, the Samling Group, right? And that goes way back in 1963, right? And they started off as a timber company, and then they diversified into property, into mining, and I think they also distribute Bentleys as well. So they diversified. And it's a tightly held conglomerate, and they are run by a father and son duo. I mean, these two are the major players in the company, but it's basically a family run company conglomerate. And I think their home base is in Sarawak, but they sort of grew. I mean, so they have regional presence. They even have presence in the Semenanjung, right? And for example, the Desa Park City neighborhood, I mean, that enclave was developed by them. And so they have that track record over there. And so the link to Taib was, when Samling's plantation arm was listed on the Bursa back in early 2000s, and they were delisted in 2012. So one of the, two substantial shareholders back then were... what's that name? Abdul Hamid Sapawi. Yes, Abdul Hamid Sapawi and one Roshidi Abdul Rahman. So Abdul Hamid is Taib's cousin, while one Roshidi is confidant of the Sarawak governor. So those links are there, and it's historical. They no longer surface in the plantation business of Samling. So now, where does the former Johor UMNO youth chief fit in? That is a very interesting puzzle that I'm still trying to figure out as well.
This Gabungan Indah that won the rights to turn this forest reserve into a mixed development project was only incorporated in November last year, if I'm not mistaken,
yes.
Right?
Correct.
So, what do you know about the process to which it was awarded? Was there an open tender that developers tendered for this project, or was it given directly? Do you know anything about the process?
I think if I'm not wrong, the state government it's not required to initiate a tender process before alienating state land to developers. So normally what happens is that private developers will propose to take over state land, and the state cabinet would consider it. So that's how it works.
Okay.
Emmanuel, you know, you describe your newsletter, The Malaysianist, as a newsletter on money and power. And, you know, there are a lot of people scratching their heads about the reasons behind the decision and saying on so many bases, on environmental points of view, from a cultural point of view, in terms of the value it is to the Temuan community and all of us in Selangor, it does not make sense. But clearly, when it comes to money and power, it could very well make sense to push this along. What do you understand to be the business proposition behind this move? Why is the Selangor State Government so interested to degazette this forest in the interests of this particular developer, do you think?
Yeah, I think you raise a significant point there. You see, because throughout this whole entire year, chronicling the fiasco, the only constant player over here is the Selangor State Government. And it's absolutely clear that the Selangor government is bent on degazetting that portion of the forest and to develop it. So I mean, it's really confusing. I mean, why do that? You know, who ultimately benefits from this? So that lack of transparency from the state government's part is really puzzling over there.
Emmanuel, thank you so much for being on the show tonight. We really appreciate your time and you sharing what you've discovered in your research. That was investigative journalist Emmanuel Samarathisa, and that's all we have for you on this episode of Consider This. Don't forget, though, that we have all the latest information on COVID-19 vaccines on the on astroawani.com as well as our Astro Awani app. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching. Good night.